And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. That's Bruce Hornsby. Love his music, and it's, as always, a wonderful blessing to be following right behind the homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show. They're my, yay, my friends and big brothers in the studio. Yaw's right there. I'm throwing out a little bit of a plug for his bagels. He's made a face like I'm not supposed to do that, but they're really delicious, so I am saying it anyway. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and we've got a whole bunch of different topics today, and we are always have a lot of gratitude for our underwriters, and Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostulas. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii, 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
The 6th Annual Kalo Festival is coming up on December 6th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Waipa, just past Hanalei, a celebration of everything Kalo. A fun day for the whole family with keiki activities including a water slide and Christmas shopping among local artisans. Ono food and music all day. Poi pounding, hands-on crafts and Kalo recipe and biggest Kalo and Kalo art contests. WaipaFoundation.org or 826-9969 for contest entry forms and pre-festival workshop information. All proceeds benefit the Waipa Foundation. The Waipa Kalo Festival, December 6th at Waipa.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and that was our sound of the shofar. So, yay! We're happy to have everybody there, and we love you. This is the station that loves you, and I really want to have an extra amount of gratitude for life and all things, and just to make sure everybody feels loved. I have a couple of people in the studio here with me. One is Aurelius McNaughton.
You said it just right.
Okay.
Thank you.
You get, so you just know people mostly by their first names. And I'm actually forgetting my second person's name who just walked in at the last moment.
Come on, Max. Grab
yeah, Max. Max. He's an artist. Max, say hi.
How's it going?
Good. What's your last name, Max?
Lemaire.
Okay.
There we go.
So, Max and Aurelius are in here with me. And one of the things I want to do at the beginning here, and I got last week I spoke about a kupuna who transcended into heaven. That is Elizabeth Ako, and just a wonderful service we had for her up at the Ko'olau Huli'ula Church in Anahola. And we had a slack key version of Amazing Grace that we played for her. And This week, I am very, very saddened to say that my friend and close neighbor and wonderful person, Dina Roth-Schneider, she transitioned out of this life too Sunday night. And her family has asked for a song for her too, which is also Amazing Grace. It's a different type of it, a different version of it. And I will play it in just a moment. But this was a really unexpected passing. She's a mother. Kaya, Keaton, and Chelsea are her children, who the older two are really close to my kids' age. So we went through all that whole process of soccer and baby school and PTSA and everything like that. And she's a great mother, and she's one of those that, you know, own everyone. And I mean, you know, she's too great to her own kids and everyone else's child. She's definitely a neighborhood mom, and she's very strong in her faith, her spiritual faith, and in God. She's a strong Christian, and so I think that's comfort to her family. It's one of these things, a little tough to really have a lot of comfort on, but she was feeling tired and getting bruised. And her friend said, oh, let's go to the doctor. So that was Friday. And then she left on Sunday. So it was leukemia. So I'm just kind of, we don't always say why somebody passes, but when something is really unexpected like that. So this was bruising and fatigue. And it's hard to find an upside in a situation like this. But she had a good life and a healthy, vibrant life. And there wasn't, sometimes like when we have passings to a form of cancer, there's a lot of pre-grieving and experience that goes on the front end of that. But so with gratitude, she did not have that. But so I wanted to play this song for her family. And I can see when I look on the internet here that people from across the sea even are listening right now. So this is Chris Tomlin with Amazing Grace. Hope it comes up right. We are having a little bit of challenges in the studio here with
Can I just add one quick thing, Felicia?
Mm-hmm, sure.
I think one of the upshots of this is that because she took such great care of not just her kids but everyone else's, that she left a legacy of community. And set an example of how everybody takes care of each other's children. So her her three kids are at least left with a great legacy of community.
That's right. And she's got two brand-new little baby grandchildren that are, you know, wonderful and amazing. And so Amazing Grace is an amazing song to be working with on that.
Ho'onaneo.
Yep.
Unending love.
Mahalo. That was Chris Tomlin. And I see a whole cluster of Madison, Wisconsin, so I'm sorry, I'm a little... Dina probably has a lot of people out there, so Madison, hey, hi. Okay, guys, help me out here. I have two people in the studio with me. I do want to say it's always important to make sure we know that we all love each other and we have love for each other, so. Mm-hmm. Two closed announcements. Kilauea Neighborhood Association meeting is tonight. That's at Kilauea Neighborhood Center, and it's going to be a lot of fun. They're prepping for our big community Christmas party. Everything's free, lots of food, big lighting.
A great scene. Lots of kids, you know, really just beautiful diversity of community coming out. And, I highly recommend it if you're in the area.
That's right. And for the under five set, well, and even over five set, I'm not going to give it away.
I can't decide which, am I in the under five set or over five? I haven't committed on that level yet.
That's right. But so it's often a very exciting evening. So, that's coming up, but tonight they're planning for it. So if you want to come in and help, and another thing that I think will come up there is there's going to be some discussion a little bit probably about the bed and breakfast, because that's back before the council tomorrow. Other thing coming up this Friday is the Lights on Rice Street Christmas Parade in Lihue, and so that's a big example of everybody having a lot of fun. Right? You know, and last weekend was a great example of everybody having a lot of fun all over. There was three different concerts that I know of, and I saw both of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, come for the food and stay for the music.
That's right, at the Homegrown Festival. And mm-hmm. So Max was there, and Aurelius was there, and I was there. I was there helping with the Regenerations Botanical Garden booth and mm-hmm. the Kauai Farmers Union United booth. And we're working really hard to grow more farmers. And we have the Go Farm program. A lot of times Eric Hansen, who's another programmer here at KKCR, he's helping get people ready, and we've got this Kilauea Ag Park. That land is, we've got the 75 acres for people to be farming. And
that's excellent.
Yeah, and Yosh Loat is, he's the head of the Kilauea Neighborhood Association, so he's there tonight, but he is one of the lead people working on the Ag Park. and he has been part of the White Paw team. And I noticed even in our startup of the show here, we talked about the Kahlo Festival, another great, great, great thing.
It's really, really happening. People are just becoming so aware of how, not just important, but how amazingly energizing it is to take control of your own local food growing, your food economy. I think we're really poised to be an example to everyone else how this can be done, and it can be fun.
Yes, and the Kahlo Festival, great fun down there, far end of Hanalei Bay, right on. Have you been there, Max?
To Waipa?
To Waipa?
I have.
Mm-hmm. I'm a regular poi maker on Thursday mornings.
Is that right?
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know you were a poi pounder.
Mm-hmm. It is so much fun. And
flex for us.
There we go.
Oh, she's got the guns.
And then
she's
I
got
really the guns. Get my fingers get the big workout. We do kapuna massage after we get most of the poi, the kalo ready for being ground. And so Taro, Waipa Festival, Sunday. And I will see you there too. So I saw both of you guys at the Homegrown Festival.
Yeah.
And there was a Willie Kay concert, too, this weekend, and that was for making homegrown teachers. You know, there's a really grow-your-own teachers because it's oftentimes hard to get teachers to come and move to Kauai and be able to afford to stay here on a teacher's salary. So they try and grow our own so the teachers can still live with Grandma.
They're already here. Yeah.
They're already here, yeah. And It's that can be a financial struggle, but we love our teachers and we try and work on that. So, Max, you were making amazing art, and it really grabbed my attention because I saw even my son bought a painting from you.
He did.
He bought a painting, and
he was a young collector.
Young collector, and you.
We need more of those.
You are the first in the collection of purchased art.
It's great to be able to make an impact and have somebody come in the gallery and really feel something and feel so compelled that he actually saved up money and said, all right, on this date, I'm coming in. I'm going to pick up this piece. So that was a great feeling. And it's great to see him really engage with it and be inspired by it. That's why I do it, I guess. I do it anyway, actually. I can't help myself. But that's why I put it out in public and open the gallery. Yeah.
And so you're painting when people come by? You're like, are you painting one, or do they just...
Most of the time, yeah. I set up an easel right outside the gallery, or if it's pouring rain, I'll bring it in. But, I've been doing actually more Kauai stuff lately. I've been wanting to paint Kauai for years, but I have so many ideas and inspirations. But this is the perfect setting, because right outside the gallery, I can see all the Hanalei Mountains. So I've been doing some Hanalei Mountain scenes, some Kalalau scenes.
Okay, I haven't seen those yet. A lot of your style is a little bit surreal, or how would you describe your art?
Sacred geometry comes to mind.
Yeah.
When I look at your art, Max, and this stuff is incredible. But there's definitely elements of nature in there, too, so I can see why you want to paint the natural scapes around here as well.
Exactly. I don't have one specific influence or style, per se, but elements of sacred geometry, visionary art elements, which is art that... takes into account spiritual experiences and the things that go beyond our five senses that we experience, and trying to translate that into something that other people can take in with their eyes and really get a sense of that. So it's art that transcends your visual experience into an emotional and spiritual experience.
Transcends the five senses, really.
Exactly.
Goes beyond.
Yeah, exactly.
I get that when I'm in your gallery. It's just a pleasure to walk in there. I highly recommend it.
Oh, you've been in there?
Yeah. Max and I, the first time I saw Max's gallery was Halloween, and I was in Hanalei visiting a couple of friends have stores and businesses there, but it was the first time I got a chance to walk in, and Max and I were one of the only two people walking down the street wearing costumes. So I think we kind of got together if nothing else, safety in numbers. We're two grown men wearing pretty awesome
honestly
costumes.
I would wear the dinosaur costume every day if I could get away with it.
I was
it was
Mad
hot
Hatter.
Though it was
yeah,
really
yeah.
hot
and the Qingyang's, they always do a really great community outreach. So many places all around the island do really good community outreach. And you're in the old section, right? The original buildings section?
I think so. I'm not sure exactly.
In the little wood building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm behind Nepali Properties.
Yeah. And so that is up there in Hanalei. And really, if people are art shopping, There's the Manifestorium, and it's like the old Qingyang store. Sometimes he calls himself the General Store of Hanalei.
I think he opened with that name, and now it's kind of evolving into, they wanted to give it a name that conveys, you know, the abundance of creativity they're bringing in, putting out.
And they also bring a very strong element of education there. They're teaching more and more diverse kinds of classes and teaching kids to use video, you know, AV equipment and stuff. So they want to be a school as well as a gallery.
Yeah, and in the upstairs section, there's actually really great equipment up there for learning, and he's got a performance area and a visual projection area, and features lots of different artists. And I'm happy to be talking about this. Right, last weekend, kind of rainy. We all managed in the rain, though. There was the Creative Arts Fair in Kapa'a. It was definitely an artisan's fair there in the big soccer field, and there'll be more of them up. And I love it when people are able to invest some of their Christmas gifting into
local arts
and crafts and local products and kwai grown and, you know, kwai made. You know, the more that we can keep our economics right on the island is really, really great. Max, has your place, it hasn't been open very long. I think of that as having been...
It's been open about 2 months. When I first opened the doors, I was also moving house and had a ton of print shop stuff to get done. So I didn't have time to do a grand opening. So that's why I'm doing it this Friday.
Oh, so you have a grand opening this Friday.
This Friday is the grand opening.
And so what does that mean to have a grand opening? There's a big... festival in your... Again, I think your little space a long time ago... was our original Cowden sailboard spot.
Is that right?
I'm pretty sure. I have
Small
to go
world.
Look. So it's a little place in the back there, but...
We're going to have some live music, just a little two-piece band, but they're an amazing...
Who is
band,
it?
Falling Down Romance. I saw them at a Dia de los Muertos party in Kapa'a.
Day of the Dead?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they were amazing. And, you know, there isn't a lot of space there, so they were just the right size as far as we could get. So we're doing that, and we'll have some refreshments, and I'm going to set up also outside some extra easels with some of the new paintings that I'm releasing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well,
one of them I was actually working on at the Homegrown Festival.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Yeah,
I really like that. And I didn't understand what you were telling me. You were trying to tell me it was durable art.
Durable?
Yeah, you said, oh, it's going to last forever. And I was like, because I said, my son bought this. And you said...
Okay, yeah. Archival. All the prints I make are all archival art, which means that they're printed with inks that are designed to last 100 years or more. And they're printed on archival materials. So if you look after them, they could last your whole lifetime and your kids can inherit them. So it's nice that the technology's come a long way that even an art reproduction can be, you know, an heirloom of sorts.
Oh, okay. All right.
He bought what's called a G clay print.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. And those are nice. So it's wonderful.
Yeah. I'm saving up for mine, Max. I already told Max which one I like the best.
Oh, that is all really.
Maybe I'll come kick off your grand opening. What time are you going to
open?
We're
going to start at 6.
Okay.
We're
going
to start at 6, and please come down. It's open to anyone in the community and anyone who's visiting.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Well, I'll be telling my friends.
I think there might be a fair few people there.
By the
feedback I'm getting, so that could be fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, what... I know that you have to go pretty soon because somebody's watching your gallery, right?
I'm not in a hurry, but yeah.
Okay, so I was... If there was a key message that you want to bring out to people about really anything, like it could be your art, it could be how you feel about the world, whatever, what would be your main thing that you want to share with the listener while you have this moment in the studio and you're on the air?
On topic, I guess I've really stepped out and put myself out there. I've been making my art anyway for my whole life, between that and furniture making. But doing it now puts myself out there, and I see people come in and have all kinds of experiences with the art. And I see them kind of have spiritual experiences, have creative excitement, get inspired. And I think that's really what it's all about, is to feed the creativity. I see people come in and get excited about art.
Right.
And I see kids come in and look at the art and their eyes get big. And, you know, sometimes you can tell the ones who are into
right.
it. And I tell them, draw every day if you can. Get a sketchbook and draw every day. So my real message is, if you have a creative outlet, nurture it. Research different types of artwork. Go on the internet, go on Instagram, look at art and get inspired, and then find a way to do it. And if anybody wants to talk to me about techniques or, you know, how things are done, different styles of art, that's part of what I'm there for too.
Yeah, you seem very, very open and happy to be engaging people while you're painting. There was a young woman next to you painting,
mm-hmm.
and you're saying, and her name is?
Isabel was sharing a booth, actually. Isabel Bryna, she has, I think it's Brynna, actually.
Another great artist.
She's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
She went through it fast. I saw the first couple of strokes, and then I walked back over there. Oh, wow.
And Max, what was that, the term that you mentioned for the genre that explores the more spiritual dimension? You had a term
Visionary
for
that.
Visionary art. Yeah, that would describe Isabel's work.
Yeah,
quite
she
well.
Has an amazing like shamanic quality to
it's
her.
It's very
her
shamanic,
work.
Yeah.
Where is her art available?
At the general store, yeah. Manifestorium.
The Manifestorium.
Okay, which is the one right around the corner in the original Ching Yong
General Store.
And I don't mean to be keep doing a plug for that place, but something I really like what he's doing is all different kinds of artists can come in there for free, whether it's spoken word, yoga. I know he's got coming up a hip-hop rap.
I went to one the other night that was it was very local hip-hop rap. It was cool, actually. It was just, I like the convergence of elements that's going on there because it's creating a meeting place for different elements of our community.
Yeah, plus I got to say, a lot of the especially local hip-hop artists, people that do spoken word to a rap beat, which, you know, that word rap makes sense to people, but you listen to some of the local artists that are doing what I call conscious hip-hop, and if you have the opportunity to listen to the words that they're saying, mm-hmm. it really is the next generation of folk music, because they're talking about mm-hmm. all the right things. You know,
did you see Tubby Love this weekend?
I
Great.
Did.
So he's one of my favorites. And talking about
he's
farmers,
awesome.
He's
a Moloa farmer.
He's a Moloa farmer and rapping about it. Yeah.
Yep. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and I've got Max and Aurelius in here with me. Tubby Love and Amber, they were also, you know, they opened up the film both times for This Changes Everything.
Mm-hmm. Great film.
Great film. It was crowded both nights. We've talked about it a little bit here, and it's really talking about the movement and people rising up and people being involved in taking action around the world, and people are waking up. That was the Ohana o Kauai tagline or, you know, message. Wake up, wise up, rise up.
Yeah, and I still see those T-shirts around to this day.
And I still have them. Yellow's not my best color, but...
oh, it looks good on you, Felicia.
It's a great theme, a great concept, and so... Tubby Love, those guys, they did speak on that one. I have had a young man helping me a few times. Malcolm Holden is his name, and he does free flow hip hop, mm-hmm. and he's a new volunteer at KKCR, and he would like to have a show, and, you know, he'd like to do music and talk, and when I was talking to Aurelius, you kind of want to do music and talk and...
Malcolm, yeah, it sounds like we'd be great co-hosts or maybe mm-hmm. alternate weeks with shows.
And you can take a collaborative spot. And for people who are listening that go, I want to have a show, the way you do come and have a show is, you know, you just either come in or call in. 826-7774 is the office line. The on-the-air line is 826-7771. We are having a little bit of telephone challenges, but the lights are at least telling me it's on. If you're trying to call and you can't get in, I'm sorry.
We're working on it. We think one or both of those lines should be working, so if you want to test it out, feel free to call in.
826-7771. But so doing free flow hip hop and music, and you know, many of these shows actually have a lot of messages in the music. When you listen to KKCR and our mission statement, it is to support the underserved voice. It's to bring out the voice of the common people, the Maka Ainana, and certainly the Kanaka Maoli, the indigenous Hawaiian people. Butch Kekahu is one of the founders of this station, and so when people hear that we put so much emphasis on the Hawaiian
voice,
viewpoint and voice, and it's just always part of our story because this is Hawaii, and they are the mo'o, the backbone, the spine of the culture here, and when we're looking at homegrown and we're looking at plants and food and farming and
food democracy, free speech. It's all about bringing the underrepresented voice back to the surface, because I think everyone, both on Kauai and in the rest of the islands and in on mainland U.S. and throughout the world, there's clearly a show of hands for people that are ready to be heard.
Ready to be heard. And so a lot of times, and Max, I don't know how much time you have, but you're welcome to hang in here with us. I last week, I had a person, I brought a person in here who was speaking about concerns over the Syrian refugees, and, you know, there's a real mixture of feelings. I happen to be, you know, on the compassionate side, so one might say that is... I have people telling me that that's a reckless thing, but, like, how do we open our doors for people? And other people say, well, maybe we get overwhelmed with whatever we might have. But Tulsi Gabbard is Kauai's representative in the U.S. Congress. And lately, she's been really showing some cojones and standing up.
She's
and
waking up, too. A lot of those people are.
She's finding her voice. And this... that I want to play, this is a, you know, this is, she said this a few weeks ago, but I want to play a little piece of hers, because what she has to say is very much what has been said by many, many people in this community at one level or another, and so it's rare to hear a political leader actually saying it.
On mainstream media.
On mainstream media, and I think also it's made some of the norms
agreement that was worked out today
a little
between the United States and Russia to avoid some accidental head-on collision between fighter jets over Syria. The secrecy of this deal, they're not making it public. Does that concern you?
It doesn't. You know, I think that the Pentagon knows and understands how important it is to make sure that our troops are not put into harm's way, and that we're not put into a situation where you have this accidental military conflict with Russia in the air. So I think making this deal with Russia to deconflict that is an important thing. But there's a bigger issue here that I'm concerned with, and that is the fact that the U.S. and the CIA are working to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad, while Russia, a longtime ally of Assad for decades now, is working to defend or uphold this Syrian government of Assad. And this puts us in a position of a possible direct head-to-head conflict with Russia as long as the U.S. and CIA continue down this path.
Well, how does the U.S. and Russia avoid that head-on contact? Because you're absolutely right. The U.S. wants to get rid of Bashar al-Assad. The Russians want to boost him and protect him together with the Iranians, their allies, the Lebanese Hezbollah group. They're trying to prop him up. So how do you avoid that potential collision?
Very simple. The U.S. and the CIA should stop this illegal and counterproductive war to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad, and should stay focused on fighting against who our enemy is, the Islamic extremist groups. Because right now we're seeing why this is counterproductive. By working towards that end, by working towards overthrowing the Syrian government of Assad, we are not only strengthening our enemy, the Islamic extremists, who will walk in and take over all of the country of Syria. Right now, they have about half of the country under their control, but it also puts us in that position of a potential direct head-to-head conflict with Russia, which brings us to the brink of a potential larger conflict of a World War III type situation.
Why do you say the U.S. effort to get rid of Bashar al-Assad's regime is counterproductive and illegal?
Well, first of all, there's not been a vote in Congress to authorize the use of force, to authorize a war to overthrow a sovereign government. For as long as I've been there, that hasn't happened. It didn't happen before I got there. So the American people haven't had a choice to speak their voice, to approve or disapprove such a war. Therefore, it's illegal. Secondly, it is counterproductive because right now, U.S. arms are getting into the hands of our enemy, al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, these other groups, Islamic extremist groups who are our sworn enemy. These are groups who attacked us on 9/11 and who supposedly we're trying to defeat, yet at the same time supporting them with these arms to overthrow this Syrian
government. So you don't even want the U.S. to provide weapons or arms to these anti-Bashar al-Assad rebels?
I don't want the U.S. government to provide weapons to al-Qaeda, to Islamic extremists, to our enemy. I think it's a very simple concept in my mind that you can't defeat your enemy if you're arming them and helping them at the same time. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Have you told this to officials at the White House?
We've had conversations, both in hearings and otherwise, and I think it's important for the American people to stand up and say, look, we don't want to go and do what happened in Iraq with Saddam Hussein, do what happened in Libya with Gaddafi, because these are countries that have fallen into chaos and that have been taken over by these terrorists because of the actions that the United States and others took.
You tweeted recently, any candidate who supports a safe no-fly zone in Syria must admit that U.S. coalition ground air troops are needed to enforce.
Yes.
That's a statement directed at Hillary Clinton, who now supports a no-fly zone. The president opposes a no-fly zone, at least for now.
It was a statement directed at all of our presidential candidates because as they are asked these questions and are taking positions on them, I think it's important for the American people to understand exactly what those positions mean. People are calling them different things, a no-fly zone or a safe zone, but for those who are pushing for this, they've got to be held accountable for the decision they're making that this will require U.S. air assets to enforce it. It will require U.S. air assets to take out anti-aircraft missile defense systems, for example, that the Syrian government has. And again, that puts us into a direct head-to-head conflict with a sovereign government, the government of Syria, and with Russia and their allies, and will also require a very large amount of ground troops on the ground to enforce this. There are a slew of other issues with this and why I think a no-fly zone would be a terrible mistake.
And I know you're obviously very concerned about what happened in Libya, getting rid of Gaddafi. The current situation there is...
The same thing will happen all over again.
It's a disaster in Libya right now. All right, stand by, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. We're going to have much more right after this. We're following Russia's escalating air war in Syria with 60 airstrikes reported in the last 24 hours alone. Russia claims they're against ISIS and other terrorist targets, but the U.S. believes they're primarily targeting rebel forces fighting the government of the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. We're back with Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii. She's a member of the Armed Services and Foreign Affairs Committee and Iraq War combat veteran at the same time. Does it not concern you that Bashar al-Assad's regime has been brutal, killing at least 200,000, maybe 300,000 of its own people with these barrel bombs, and all these reports of hundreds of thousands of people who have been left homeless, billions, in fact, refugees. And the U.S. is obviously, so many other international powers are so upset about that and want to get rid of him as a result of what he's been doing to his own people over the past 4 years.
Yeah, well, if it concerns me deeply to see this tremendous and tragic human suffering. I think it's important for leaders of the world, leaders here in the United States, to look at this issue, though, and say, okay, if you do in Syria what happened in Libya, what happened in Iraq, because the same things that are being said about Assad right now were said about Gaddafi. They were said about Saddam Hussein by those who were advocating for the U.S. to go in and intervene, to overthrow those regimes and those dictators. The fact is that if that happens here in Syria, as U.S. leaders and others are advocating for, we will end up with a situation far worse than we're seeing today. We'll end up in a situation with far greater human suffering, with far greater persecution of religious minorities and Christians in Syria. and our enemy will be far stronger. They will take over the entire country of Syria. They will have greater weapons and capabilities and present a greater threat not only to the people in the region, but to the world.
So what you're saying is that the Russian military involvement on the air, on the ground, the Iranian involvement in Syria right now, the Hezbollah involvement, they're actually doing the U.S. a favor.
They are working towards defeating our common enemy. When you look at the groups that are on the ground there, the most effective fighting groups to fight, who are fighting to overthrow this government, the Syrian government of Assad, they are predominantly ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, and these other Islamic extremist groups. They make up the vast majority of these so-called Syrian rebels. They are the most effective force who has gained the most territory. So the people who they're attacking in the Russians are dropping bombs are these Al-Qaeda, people who are enemy, people who attacked us on 9/11.
So you're basically saying you don't want your fellow soldiers, and you're a member of the Hawaii National Guard. You just were promoted from captain to major. You served in Iraq. You don't want the men and women of the U.S. military on the ground in any of those areas. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, there's no reason for them to go and be deployed to these situations. I think it's important for us, first and foremost, to recognize, A, who our enemy is, and B, what our mission is. Our mission is to defeat our enemy, not to take action that's counterproductive to that mission, and help our enemy get stronger. It's a very simple premise, and I think it's important for us to focus on that.
I was really concerned when you mentioned to me the other day you were surfing in Hawaii and you got hit by the surfboard. What happened?
I was out surfing at one of my favorite spots early in the morning, and there was a guy who had a big longboard, and he wasn't wearing a leash, so he caught a set wave. He bailed on the wave, and the board came flying in my direction and unfortunately hit me in the face. But got a little bloody, nothing broken, everything's fine.
You look like you're okay right now.
I'm okay.
Any permanent injuries?
No, it's a little tender, but nothing permanent.
Still, but it'll heal.
Yeah.
Well, you look good.
Thanks for asking.
All right, good. I'm glad you're okay.
Thanks.
Thanks very much, Congressman Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii.
Okay, so actually,
wow.
Yeah. Nice.
She's really grown up, isn't she?
Yeah, you know, I think that that's kind of great. And, you know, this was a few weeks back. I noticed today they have made the statement they're putting 50 special forces permanently in Iraq. I kind of really feel for that group of people, you know. That I guess that they've got reasons strategically. They feel
50,000.
No, 50. 50 people. 50.
Oh, 50 people.
50.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, they've been talking about that for
yeah,
a
so
wow,
they
it just almost blew my mind.
Yeah,
no,
they went there.
Well, they've been doing that. They've been doing that for a while. These special forces that are supposedly deployed to train the current government to be more effective, and it's really a part of regime change, which you know, I don't think has ever really worked. That's just my opinion. But I thought that the strongest statement that I heard in what you just played was when Tulsi said, Congress did not vote to overthrow a sovereign government, and therefore, technically, under international law, this is illegal. And so we have to be careful. The U.S. has to be careful on what toes they step on here.
That's right. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. That was just a clip. It's several weeks old of Tulsi Gabbard, but she was really speaking about calling into question the main narrative that's happening about how to be handling what we're doing in Syria. That happened before what happened in Paris.
Yeah.
But since then, like, she's been over there in Paris. I actually did put a call into her office to see if she could call in today. She's probably somewhere. But she does call in here from time to time. She's pretty good about doing that.
Yeah, good. Well, I mean, she's representing Hawaiian leadership great, and she also said some important things, as you just alluded to, about the narrative, you know, why most voters are still kind of standing behind these decisions that are being made for us, that this is all about going to kill the bad guys, and yet, you know, when you look into it,
it's very complicated.
The United States is selling weapons to all of these people. And so, you know, we're selling weapons to people that want to get Assad out. And, you know, Russia is backing people that want to keep them in. And, you know, Syria is taking our weapons and using them not just against ISIS, but to continue their own I will say on my own opinion, genocidal war against the Kurds. And so you've got U.S. weapons just flying around everywhere, and it's billions and billions of dollars changing hands, none of which, you know, benefits anybody, certainly not the American economy. It's just a couple of small companies that are making all the money off the weapons.
Well, when you're bringing up the economy, I pulled up another clip that she did about a year ago, and this is talking about the role of the international banks in some of this. So again, she's calling it out. And then when we spoke at the Homegrown Festival, Aurelius, you had an interesting perspective as somebody relatively new, a few years into being here in Hawaii, and your motivation.
Homegrown was my third year.
Yeah, that's how it came up. And you, I think your first year was with Nako Bear and Medicine for the People.
My second night in Kauai, I got to see Nako for the first time.
Yeah.
That's where I met you, too.
That's where I met Max as well.
I know. It's
a great interaction.
It's a whole connection.
As well.
And they're great. You know, they, and it really, I watch that particular band keep making changes and movements and shapes, and I you know, he really put up his triangle, his Mauna Kea sign, a number of times in the show there, and he, you know, has his place in Hilo. So I'm just gonna play this little 45 second clip of Tulsi, and then we'll move past this international, but like look at the interpersonal within the global, you know, both local and global. So let's, this is her talking about fighting the bailout of big banks.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. There are two kinds of people serving here in Congress: those who are here to serve the interests of the American people, and those who are here to serve the interests of the big banks and Wall Street speculators. The big banks that forced the American people to bail them out in 2008 are even bigger today than they were before. And this bill that passed today sets the American taxpayer up to bail them out yet again. The passage of this bill brings us ever closer to the precipice of an economic disaster that will make the 2008 meltdown seem like a picnic. Madam Speaker, I yield back.
Okay, she called that one out right there, too.
Dropping science.
Dropping science. Hey, Max,
yep.
Artist. Happy man.
Thank you so much for having me on the radio here.
You're so welcome. And so you're going to go down to your studio right now.
Headed down there right now, might get a little painting done, get some prep work for the opening. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for coming in to KKCR.
Thank you.
Friday at 6, right, Max?
Friday at 6. Come on down.
I'll come see you.
Hanalei in the old buildings.
All right.
Aloha. So, Aurelius, when you see this, and even let's bring it to where what you were talking about when I saw you at the concert, and we were speaking about the music, and I really like their name of their band, Medicine for the People, and when you were speaking about hip-hop, and they're not exactly hip-hop, but he definitely flows a very
strong,
political message in his music, and, I mean, it's beyond political. It's the spiritual as well as purpose of life and railing against the machine, standing up.
Yeah, there's no one word you could use to describe Nako's music. And when it was my second night on Kauai, and I walked in and they were just getting on stage, I could not believe the diversity of ideas, the power, the truth. You know, he's calling it out, much like Tulsi is learning to do in her own forum. And also looking around me at the other people from Kauai that, you know, I'm discovering Nako Bear and Medicine for the People for the first time. And everybody around me already knows the words, so I already know that I love them. And I thought, wow, I've been traveling. I left New York City at the age of 19. I've been traveling for 20 years, and I think I've finally found my home. I think I finally found my people.
And then, you know, you made some really interesting comments about, like, what it felt like coming here and what you were hoping to experience here versus the reality that you...
Yeah, I know which part of our conversation you're referring to. You know, Felicia, I've known for a long time that there's something bad in the world. And, you know, I really related very much to that line in the movie of The Matrix when Morpheus said to Neo, "Oh, Neo, you've known this your whole life. You know, there's something wrong with the world. You can feel it when you go to work. You can feel it when you pay your taxes. You can't smell it or see it or touch it, but it's everywhere." And I first became aware of this when I was 5 years old, and my mother sat me down and told me that there was two countries, and one was called Iraq, and one was called Iran, and that these two countries were going to war, and that we were that everyone was very scared about it. And, you know, my mom has always been great about transferring adult topics to me, regardless of age. I mean, she's had grown-up talks with me since I was three. But this one really stands out because it was the first time I really understood that there's a thing called war. And so after she told me that, that night I had a dream. And outside my bedroom window is the Manhattan skyline. In my dream, I saw these big machines falling down and blowing up the buildings. And I didn't know what war looked like. I didn't see war movies. All I knew from what my mom had told me is that there's something bad happening, and it's called a war. And she tried to assure me that it would never happen at home, but and she didn't make me feel anxious, but because I knew that my mom was worried, you know, I felt her. And so the next morning I woke up and it was current events. I think I was going to second grade at the time, and I said, "Mommy, I want to tell the people in school that there's a war happening." And so she gave me a newspaper clip about the war between Iran and Iraq, and I'll never forget the look on my teacher's face when other kids are, like, you know, bringing in stories about cats stuck up in trees, and you know, I wanted to tell everybody there's this terrible war going on. But I felt that fear, and you know, as I grew up to understand the global politics, I started to realize that I didn't really feel safe in America. And you know, I certainly knew that New York City was dangerous. I grew up in the streets of Manhattan, was not new to danger, but I felt that there was a bigger danger looming out there. So at the age of 19, I decided I wanted to go see the Middle East. I wanted to see the pyramids. I wanted to meet the people there. I spent 2 years traveling through Europe and the Middle East. And, you know, there's a lot that happened between then and now, but basically my father always told me, if you're going to go travel somewhere, make sure you're traveling towards something that you like, and that it's not a good idea to be traveling because you're running away from something. And I said, "Well, I'm running away from here." And he and I actually had an argument about that, but you know, I came to see the wisdom of what he was saying, and you know, what he was trying to tell me. And so I became very excited about where I was going. And that led me back home after 2 years in Europe and the Middle East. And I spent time in Baltimore and Philadelphia and really rounded out my Northeast urban experience quite well. Spent some time living in the country, getting away from the city, but the whole time learning about this kind of like growing feeling that something was wrong.
And so when you came to Kauai, you at that point were somewhat running away. You were running away from what you felt like was wrong, and that was in 2012?
Yes. I made it a point to be in Kauai by December 21st, 2012. I felt like
which
that
was supposed to be the day that the world ends, or? I remember there was
a lot of people took it that way. It's the last day on the Mayan calendar, and I could spend a whole show explaining why the Mayan calendar ended on that date. But certainly no one who's studied the Mayan calendar was saying that the world was going to end. There was a finish to certain kinds of cycles, but a beginning of a new calendar.
Right. It's a nesting of cycles.
Yeah, it's kind
on
of
the calendar.
A spiral,
right,
where a cycle gets smaller and smaller and smaller and kind of becomes too small to see anymore, but then expands out the other side.
So I'm just going to bring you to what you were saying that when we were talking, is that when you felt that you were trying to get away from a lot of these things that made you uncomfortable in the United States, and you came to Kauai, you had, you know, the little tripling of problems, the phone not working, losing the phone, you know, all those kind of little things that can be discouraging. But it had hit you at some point that those problems, you didn't successfully run away from them.
Yeah.
That they were right here too.
Yeah, let me jump in here because that's exactly, I'm so glad that you're such a good listener. You really took that in. Here's a conversation we're having in the middle of a concert. So I got to Kauai in December of 2012 and had some time while I was establishing myself to think about why I had decided to move here. It was a spontaneous decision. And I realized, thinking of my father's words, that I had, in fact, been running away from something. And that it was, I had, in fact, come to the ends of the earth, you know, where the westernmost part of the quote-unquote United States, but certainly, you know, the westernmost inhabited island, and we experience the last sunset on this planet before it becomes tomorrow on the other side. So I literally ran away to the ends of the earth. I found one of the largest military installations in the world. I found ground zero for pesticide and genetically modified organisms, organisms testings. And I found that I had run away from this monster my whole life, only to find myself in the epicenter of the struggle, which is truly, I can now put it into words, the theft of indigenous people's lands for profit, you know. And I was taught stories in school about, oh, ha ha, how we bought Manhattan for a handful of beads from the Native Americans. Isn't that a funny story? Now let's go eat some turkey. And the more Hawaiians I've met, the more I realize that they resent being told a false narrative in school as well. And so now, thanks to the information age, we are truly educating each other. And there's a lot of efforts being made to rewrite textbooks so that they reflect a more realistic version of history. And people are more and more aware that this flag waving and blind chasing of money has been at the expense of a great majority of the people. Many people who never thought it could happen to them are experiencing home loss, experiencing the negative effects of not having a complete education. And so I came to Kauai to run away, and today I sit here in front of you to realize that the real reason I came here is so that I can stand up, stop running, and face my the thing that pursues me, face my enemy. And I think we do that together by standing up and joining hands and turning around. Just no more running.
Right. And we're all in, you know, varying degrees of discovery of what maybe has been taught to us that's false, and also knowing that we have different habits. We all have habits that are habits of convenience. I think in the Western world, especially in the United States and Hawaii too, is we fear not being able to find your phone or to be able to drive down the road or have something to eat quickly or a hot shower. You know, when you look at what is, when I look at it and I go, how come people don't show up at more of these meetings or show up to really voice out? And that we just get in the habit of convenience. And something I do
want, we're wired for that. We're programmed from a very young age that this is what matters. You have to have access to shopping. You know, you have to have gas in your car. And other things aren't that important. Other things are stories on the TV that happen to other people.
And we have a separation even from our food. And, you know, there's so many things to say on this. I'm seeing that it's 5 o'clock, and so we're just about straight up. So I want to say that you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei K-A-Q-A, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Aurelius McNaughton is in the studio with me helping pull this show together. We do have a phone line at 826-7771 and 826-7774. It's been raining really hard, people might notice. Our phones don't seem to be working that well. So,
but please do try and call us up. Let us know if it's working. We'd like to hear what you think about this conversation so far.
Yes, and Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man. And we're also, I like how Amy Goodman asks for a donation for us, and I'm just going to throw that on here because she's over there in Paris right now. She helps bring what's going on in the world to the listeners on Kauai.
She's so good, and I'm so glad that I think it was Jonathan Jay got in touch with her and had her record this special.
He did. It was custom, it was his doing.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
There's a meeting of the Ke Kahu Foundation Outreach and Development Committee on Wednesday, November 11th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Cafe Coco.
Oops,
these meetings are open to the public.
Aloha, for more information, KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I just put the community in that one. You know, it's just people in the community who are doing it.
Hey, we're real here. We're not perfect, but we're perfectly real.
That's right. So we have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Aloha, Felicia. I'm enjoying your show. I'm listening to you from all the way across the United States of America in Baltimore.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a really interesting show. I enjoyed listening to Max and hearing about his artwork. And it's great to hear Aurelius. He's got a very deep baritone voice. I'm enjoying his comments and his philosophy and glad to hear that he stopped running.
Dad.
Yay!
Thanks for calling in. Yeah, well, my voice isn't normally this baritone, but I was hooting and hollering at the Homegrown Music Festival, so I have a little bit of a raspiness.
I wish I could have been there at the concert. It sounds wonderful. Felicia, what a wonderful place you live in.
Well, thank you so much, and you don't sound like you're from New York or Baltimore. Where are you from?
Well, I grew up in Australia.
Okay,
and,
that's what I was thinking.
I was there for the first 22 years, and then I went to London to do a PhD, and it didn't work out, so I joined a traveling commune and finished up in the United States of America.
Wonderful. And how many children did you have?
I had two. I had Aurelius was first, and his sister was second, and that was it. And he and I have had some wonderful adventures together, and one in particular I'll mention was I had a radio show in New York City, and when he was very, very young, he asked if he could come into the studio. I was a bit nervous about it, but put him in the control room with the engineer and the receptionist on the telephone, and he wanted to come into the studio, and so occasionally I would involve him in the radio show there as well, and now I don't have to because he's got a start all of his own.
Dad, I also have a memory of one time when I got a little bit too interested and crawled up onto the board and started pressing buttons, and the technician had to rip me away from the board because I was getting on the air while you were trying to talk.
So that's a perfect way to blame the last mistake that you heard on him, but it really wasn't.
That was me. Yeah, I'm the one who was causing all the trouble there.
Well,
Felicia, you have a wonderful, relaxed style. I'm enjoying your show.
Well, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling in, Dad. I love you.
Okay, I love you too. Take care. Aloha.
Aloha.
Mahalo.
Well, that was wonderful.
I did not expect that at all. That's a great kick.
Yep. Well, parents love their kids.
And we want to make our parents proud.
He sounds very youthful and playful. So you were kind of in the middle of what you're saying, and
well, it's one big story. You know, I go back to that point where there's a narrative that we're taught where everything's okay, you know, as long as we, you know, make this much money a year and that certain, unfortunate facts about our history are more like paintings of Thanksgiving dinners rather than the systematic genocide of the Native Americans. And coming to Kauai, I spent a lot of time on Big Island and Maui as well. And but it was only when I came to Kauai that I started to, and possibly because, you know, I just basically crashed on the shore. And so that enabled me to meet more Hawaiians. You don't meet a lot of Hawaiians in Maui, and you meet a lot of Hawaiians on Big Island, but they're not always interested in talking to you if you're the new guy. And but Kauai has been what I considered, you know, a really great entry point for somebody from the outside to understand what's really going on here.
Yes, and we have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Hey, how's that? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, I just wanted to say, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, you know, one thing I will say about her, she don't need to worry about her district. You know, like, when we wonder, how do these nuts get into Congress and then they have some small, dedicated, fringe voter block that keeps getting them in, huh? She has her voter block that she can go against the Democratic Party and say what she should be saying, the truth, and, you know, and she doesn't have to worry about going home and up on Kauai going, oh, Tulsi, you're too PC or whatever, you know. She knows that she can still get in, and who's challenging her?
Well,
and I voted for her. I've been voting for her and supporting her from the very beginning when she was having to break her shadow of her father, because she's actually opposite of her dad. And so, you know, now I feel she's on her two legs and she's running. And I've been happy enough that my daughter's been able to visit her in Congress while, you know, up on the Congress floor. So, and she treated my daughter well and listened, and, you know, she represents us well. I just wanted to, you know, throw my pride out there about her. I'm so proud that she represents our county. I love it.
And me too. Can you speak right into your phone?
Oh, I just was saying I'm proud of Tulsi, and, you know, she doesn't have to worry about her district. She will get voted in.
I know.
No matter
what
she says.
She's,
you know,
doing a good job. Hey, and have you followed any of the stuff with the Na'il Puni, like the U.S. Supreme Court?
I believe it was not Kennedy. Was it which Supreme Justice?
Yeah, it was Justice Kennedy. So
I believe it was Kennedy.
He put a hold on...
on opening the results.
For the vote. Mm-hmm. Now, I saw that this is for the Na'il Puni, and part of that, when they're saying that it's not, he's saying he's not sure that that's legal.
Yeah, it's something to do with race discrimination.
Mm-hmm. And so I see that the date has been pushed out for when people are voting. There are many people who want this vote to simply never happen. I tried to look online to see if the whole Supreme Court came together to be coming up with a full declaration on this. And if somebody has heard that, be a knock on my listener and call it in, because I'm not seeing that date. But Na'il Puni, they have extended the deadline for voting, I think, out to like December 21st. I'm trying to look that up.
I'm curious. I didn't hear when. Okay, I know they put an injunction on opening the results. I didn't hear a time. Is that indefinite, or is there like a date that?
Well,
have to revisit it? Or how does it work at this point?
Well, it should be that the whole court needs to look at it. And so I struggled to find that, and I have not found that. We were talking about this last week. I have not seen that they have given a full court assessment, but I do see that the date by the organizers has been, they pushed out that deadline. And so the whole court hasn't come to totally speak about it. And, you know, I don't understand enough about the courts to understand why things take so long. You know, the U.S. Supreme Court, they just jumped in on this at the last moment. I'm sure they have other issues on their docket, so I don't know when they will come up with this. But, okay, I am seeing the deadline has been extended to December 21st. But the Hawaii State Supreme Court had put a stay on the permit for the 30-meter telescope being built up on Mauna Kea. And supposedly they were going to revisit that December 2nd, which is tomorrow. So that will be interesting, too. It's very important, everybody, to be paying attention and be watching what's up. But that had been something Aurelius was speaking about, is really recognizing, like, here in Hawaii, too, people have been scooted off
their ancestral lands, yeah. And it's happening everywhere, all over the world, but it's very important here.
One of the things that I did notice on what the intent of this, their goals are, if this election was to go through, was to reclaim. Now, I don't know if they're going to go to, like, private property and try to reclaim the houses, but, you know, I think one of their pushes is to take control of back of, like, you know, like how Honolulu Airport is really ceded land, I believe, or private land or something. How does that work?
Yeah, many public facilities, airports, and things are put on.
And I think that's one of their overall goals in the long term. I think that's what this is, a lot of it's about, is getting financial control of those assets. And other things. But from what the few parts of what I've read, I'm not as literate on the whole thing, and I wouldn't want to act as an expert on the issue, but I have seen some of it. You know, and that I've identified it. Oh, yeah, okay, I see it. But that's a good thing. You know, I mean, I know a lot of Hawaiians that are against this voting. And like I said, I really only keep up with what I need to keep up so that I'm not in the dark. You know, I'm not a voting member. And I don't even know all the delegates or all the people that, you know, I don't even know the five from Kauai, to be honest. Oh, is it five from Kauai?
I think there's three.
Oh, three. Yeah,
so, are you going to the county council meeting on Wednesday?
Tomorrow, yes. I plan on going.
And is there a particular issue that is of most importance to you?
I got to be honest. My style is I show up and I see the docket as it goes. I have tried a few times to see where the agenda is on the computer. And I got to be honest, I'm going to admit on live air, we got it. I'm not so good at it.
Well, you know what, caller? You're really good at speaking your mind, and there's no shame in that game, brother.
Oh, thank you very much. And, yes, I will be going to the agenda item. And, you know, mostly I like to just stay educated. I found that when I was younger, one of the greatest atrocities that I did as a civilian, as a citizen, was I didn't stay informed. And that, I gotta be honest, that goes to being grown up as a plantation style resident. You know, I grew up as the last generation of active sugar over here.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
You know, complacency was part of the goal, you know?
That's one of the ways they do this. They make your work day so long. By the time you get home, you just want dinner. And, you know, if you're lucky, you get time to hug your kids and maybe, you know, play some music. And then you get up and you have to do it again. But, you have the opportunity. We all have the opportunity now to inform our young, you know, our keiki, our kids, yep, our grandkids, how important it is to stay informed. And once we all get
aware. Can I jump in? I heard you earlier talking about Manhattan being sold for a couple beads and how the story was taught to you as a good thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's similar to what we talking about. Like, when we were in school, you know, we were taught certain things that were, you know, false truths, right? So that to the eye of the beholder who's telling the story, is it good or is it bad, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same thing with that. That was actually caught my ear earlier. I was in and out of my car. But I did hear that, and I thought, oh, wow, you know, that's kind of similar, you know.
Well, thank you for hearing that. That's why I'm here, is I want to share our story.
So, yeah, well, my girl is training, and I got to go in and watch my champion train. So,
okay, so when I get...
I will not be listening to the radio anymore. I'm sorry to say that, but
I'm just about to play the county council report, just so you can hear it. So I'll let you go off the air. You can hear what's coming up.
I'm going to listen to that. Thank you so much.
Okay, so...
You guys have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
And everybody, drive safe in this weather.
Yeah. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of November 30th. There will be a regular council meeting on Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here highlights from the agenda. Dr. Dilip G. Bal, Kauai District Health Officer, State of Hawaii Department of Health, requests agenda time to provide a briefing on Tropic Care Kauai 2016. The Civil Defense Manager requests council approval to receive and spend grant funds from the United States Department of Homeland Security via the State of Hawaii Department of Defense in the amount of $685,000 to continue to enhance the capability of state and local units of government to prevent, deter, respond to, and recover from threats and incidents of terrorism, as well as all hazards catastrophic preparedness initiatives. The planning director transmits the planning commission's recommendation to amend the county code to clarify the process whereby homestays are reviewed in the commercial districts, resort zoning districts, and residential districts, and establishes standards under which homestays should operate. And this is proposed draft bill number 2609. Councilmember Yukimura transmits for council consideration for inclusion in the 2016 Kauai County Council legislative package a bill for an act authorizing the issuance of general obligation bonds and making an appropriation in the amount of $5 million for the purchase of the courtyards at Waipoli, that is the East Kauai Workforce Affordable Housing. County attorney requests reconfirmation and reapproval of its prior recommendation for authority to spend funds up to $50,000 to retain special counsel to represent Irvin Maganis in State of Hawaii versus Irvin Maganis. This is also to be discussed in an executive session. The county engineer requests approval to spend Clean Water State Revolving Fund monies up to a principal amount not to exceed $6 million for construction of the gas collection and control system for the Kakaha landfill. This is resolution number 2015-63. The county attorney requests authorization to spend up to $50,000 to retain special counsel to represent Shailene Asuri in her individual capacity in Diana Gossenfold White versus the County of Kauai. This is also to be discussed in executive session. There were two claims submitted by the county clerk. Bills for the first reading include proposed draft bill number 2609, a bill for an ordinance amending the county code relating to homestays. In the non-public executive sessions, items include a request for the county attorney pertaining to the hiring of a county auditor and to consult with the county's legal counsel. Also, the office of the county attorney wants to provide counsel with a briefing in the case of Akara Kotamitsu versus the County of Kauai, and this is a civil case. If the council's not finished with this meeting by approximately 1:30 p.m., it will recess for a public hearing on Bill 2602 and 2603 related to a bill for an ordinance amending an ordinance relating to the operating and capital budgets of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising the amounts estimated in the Criminal Assets Forfeiture Fund. This is for the Kauai Police Department's KPAL Youth Center Interim KPD Training Facility in the amount of $300,000. A hearing will be held on Bill 2604 for an ordinance to establish a new article in the county code relating to barking dog nuisances. A hearing on Bill 2605 for an ordinance amending and an ordinance relating to the capital budget for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising the amounts estimated in the Development Fund, CIP, and that's Coco Palms Resort Development Use Permit Conditions, $110,000. And finally, Bill 2606 for an ordinance amending the county code by adding a new section 5A9-3 relating to homestead tax cap, home exemption, and long-term affordable rental properties. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai/webcastmeetings. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
All right, and KKCR is always happy to be helping disseminate what's going on in the government and to be facilitating everybody being able to participate. I have a caller. Aloha, caller. Thank you so much for holding. You're on the air.
Okay, hi. This is Raymond Catania.
Hi.
And hi, how you doing, Felicia? And this is my friend here that I have by the name of Josh Kapp. We're both Hawaii Government Employee Association members. I'm retired, but Josh is still working as a eligibility worker on the west side in the Department of Human Services. and we're here to talk to you about a very important issue that concerns the life of our union and the life of all public worker unions, including that of teachers. And I'm going to have my friend Josh explain what the case is. It's the Fredericks versus California Teachers Association case, which is going to be heard soon, I believe in early January or mid-January, and it's going to be affecting all public worker unions in the United States. So I'll be giving it over to Mr. Josh Kapp.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, Felicia. Thanks for taking the time to have us on.
Stoked. Yes. So tell us what's up.
All right. So there is a case that is about to be heard by the United States Supreme Court. As Ray mentioned, it is the Fredericks versus the California Teachers Association. It will be before the court on January 11th of next year. And what this case revolves around is how unions operate, how public sector unions operate, rather, by collecting dues or agency fees. So at the heart of the case, you have to look back to a Supreme Court decision from 1977 called, it was Abood versus the Detroit Board of Education. And in this case, the Supreme Court voted unanimously that agency shop, public sector agency shop unions are able to collect agency fees in order to further collective bargaining. So what that means, what agency shop means is it's a form of union security agreement where the employer may hire union or non-union workers as employees, and the employees don't necessarily need to join the union in order to remain employed. However, non-union workers must pay a fee to cover for collective bargaining costs. So basically, if you're going to be taking a position in, let's say, the state or the county, you pay into the system of which you're receiving many benefits, such as vacation, sick, protections from the union, and things like that. So basically, at the heart of this case, I was basically invited by Justice Alito, who said, you know, we basically, it's time to challenge the Abood case. So a bunch of teachers in California, Fredericks, her name is Rebecca Fredericks, she's from California, her and about 10 other teachers brought this case, worked its way up through the courts, and now it's going to be heard before the Supreme Court. And they are going to be asking, does agency fees go against their First Amendment rights? So that's the
Can
big question.
Can you clarify that for me? Because the First Amendment rights, that's your right to free speech,
that's right?
That's right. So how would agency fees conflict with your First free speech?
The Abood case from 1977 says it doesn't. It doesn't conflict with freedom of speech because a non-union union member does not have to become a union member in order to keep their job. So by getting a job with the state or the county, dues are automatically deducted right from the start, and that goes towards collective bargaining because everyone who's a part of the state or the counties benefit from collective bargaining. So that's what the Abood case from 1977 said. That does not affect freedom of speech because you still have the choice. You do not need to join the union. And another big thing...
So what you don't have a choice is to not pay for the benefits because if somebody wasn't in the union, they're still getting the benefits.
They're still getting the benefits.
Okay.
Exactly. So one big thing that came from the Abood decision is that there is a distinction as to what dues can and cannot be used for. And the big thing that dues cannot be used for is for campaigning, federal campaigning. So that's, you know, the freedom of speech argument comes into play where what Fredericks is saying is that union dues are being used for political purposes.
Mm. And is that true? Probably.
Well, no.
Okay,
What the Abood case made clear was that dues monies cannot be used for federal campaigns. So anytime the unions, you know, support a candidate, what have you, all those monies have to be raised outside of dues. So those are union members contributing more money in order to facilitate those goals. And that's a big push that that the unions are trying to do is to raise money, especially, you know, with the Citizens United case that just went through, and, you know, money is just pouring in everywhere.
So for non-lawyers who might be listening, Citizens United says basically money is free speech and that
right.
an endless amount can be given to support a campaign.
Right, right. So that's exactly right. So the big question that revolves around this case is, does agency fees to fund collective bargaining violate First Amendment rights? So Justice Alito basically invited this out a couple of cases ago dealing with home care workers. He basically, in his opinion, basically invited someone to come forward with this case to challenge Abood. And so what would happen if Friedrichs were, if the Friedrichs side were to be successful, it would basically mean that anyone who would contribute agency fees towards a union would have to do so voluntarily. Now, that would mean that the unions, instead of focusing on workers' rights and protecting and trying to benefit workers, they would instead need to focus on getting people to sign up to become members and pay those dues themselves. So really what it does is it would make the country basically right to work right off the start. And
so for people who aren't really Akamai sure. or Ma'a about this, right to work means right to work is it's almost a wrong name for it.
It sounds great, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it's almost the opposite of what it
exactly.
sounds like. It means
so, what we
right
like
to not
is,
have a union, almost, right?
Right
or like no union.
Less. Right to work for less.
There you go, right to work for less, you just said.
Yeah, that's how we like to call right to work, is right to work for less. Basically what it means is no more collective bargaining. Basically what the employer says goes. There's no grievance procedure, so if you know, you have a problem in the office, boom, you can be gone just like that. An example, if you don't mind, there's a pretty good example of right to work versus collective bargaining. If you look at Minnesota and Wisconsin, in 2010, you know, we got Scott Walker in Wisconsin, but then in Minnesota we got Governor Mark Dayton. These are two polar opposite characters. You know, Scott Walker, his plan involved tax cuts for the wealthy, dismantling collective bargaining while championing trickle-down economics. And Mark Dayton's plan, on the other hand, involved taxes for the top 2%, involved taxes for the top 2%. Legislators passed laws that expanded unionization, free college tuition, increased minimum wage, required equal pay for women, legalized same-sex marriage, eased voter restrictions, and boosted primary education spending and other, and established all-day kindergarten. So when these two went into office, Minnesota had a $6 billion budget deficit. Wisconsin had a $3 billion budget deficit. Now, looking at it from this past summer, with all those things that I listed with Minnesota, with Governor Dayton's plan, Minnesota now has $2 billion in surplus. He added 172,000 jobs, and his unemployment rate is 3.6%. And now Minnesota is consistently ranked one of the top states for business. Now,
Wow. Just
go right next door to Wisconsin, where they still believe trickle-down economics works. And for the past 30 years, you can see that it really doesn't work. Wisconsin still has a $2 billion deficit. They're 44th in the nation in private sector job creation. And their unemployment rate is 5.2%.
So you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia. Aurelius McNaughton is in the studio with me. And I have Josh Kapp from the Hawaii Government Employees Association on the line with us, explaining to us about a court case that's going before the U.S. Supreme Court. And it will help us to understand why people on Kauai, what's the outcome of the thumbs up and a thumbs down? I'm just trying to root it into people who are less ma'a about all these details.
Sure. And one thing I just want to point out, I am a member of HGA, but I'm not in an official capacity representing HGA. I just want to make sure that's clear. So
you sound official. You sound very well informed.
All right. So let me jump back to Wisconsin to tie it into how it could potentially affect us here on island. So when Scott Walker came into power and he got legislation passed through to basically dismantle collective bargaining for public sector workers, it was an immediate effect. Basically, the average worker's take-home pay per paycheck dropped $200. Not $200 a month, not $200 a year, $200 a paycheck. So that will make a huge difference here.
Yes, you had times that by 26 or 52.
Right, I mean, that you're looking at between $5,000 and $6,000 less per year. And with no collective bargaining, the workers there basically just had to take it. There was no other recourse. They couldn't go. They were no longer invited to the table.
They were striking in the streets. It was a very big issue. Big issue.
Exactly.
And, in this case, they didn't win.
Right. They did not. And, Scott Walker survived recall. But if you look at him now, you know, he did say he was going to run for president. And, I mean, he barely survived 2 or 3 months before he had to drop out because he had less than 1% of the voter base supporting him.
And so recall means trying to get him out of office. It's like impeaching the governor.
Exactly. So he survived that. So he is still governor. But what really, I think it's been a few years now since Walker, I mean, it was 2010, I believe, when he came into power. So we've had 5 years to see if his plan would work. And if you just look at Wisconsin, you know, people are retiring left and right. They can't fill positions. So now workers have to work double time. And they're not getting paid any extra. There's no collective bargaining. There's no rights whatsoever. So now imagine that happening here. It could happen. I mean, that's the one thing I always tell my colleagues and, you know, people around. It's like nothing that we have is set in stone. It can easily be taken away. Everything that we fight for, we as the union, union members, we fight for, you know, we have to negotiate our contracts every 2 years or so. And there's things that always get brought up on the table, you know, that we have to fight for every time, you know, whether it be vacation, sick leave, if anything like that. And it can easily be taken away. I mean, just look at Maui, what's going on there with the privatization.
Well, tell us, because, again,
sure,
probably not all the listeners know.
So Maui's hospital, just the state legislature decided to make it a private hospital. They're selling it off to Kaiser. And I don't have all the details, you know, hammered out in my head as to what's going on with that, but I do know that the state will still pick up the tab on some of that. So we're losing a lot of good jobs are going to be taken. A public service is now going to be private.
So
and that's always dangerous.
I want to bring something up here. Like,
sure,
the state hospital system is really struggling, and sometimes,
yep,
it's more than just losing a lot of good jobs. We have two state hospitals on Kauai, Kauai Veterans Memorial Hospital, KVMH, and Mahi Lona. Both provide really important services, and they are both at risk, at threat,
right,
to being closed or shifted to something else. And
privatized.
I know that, I haven't heard a privatization discussion happening, but, I mean, it's beautiful. Mahi Lona is, oh, my gosh, you know, the view from up there is incredible, but that has long-term care at a pretty affordable rate. And it also has, for people who have mental illness. And what we've seen across the country, it happened heavily in the 70s, is they closed all these state hospitals. They basically dumped people with mental illnesses out onto the streets, many of whom then end up in the prisons, which is less humane and more costly.
Right.
So I'm just kind of trying to normalize it for people who don't understand all the union elements, that something like a state hospital, it's a bigger loss than just the jobs. You're saying it's
absolutely
the jobs, but it is.
No. It absolutely is.
And when these people work double time and you think, well, why would they do that? What I have found in the public sector is there are many workers who really take their kuleana, their responsibility for what they provide, deep to heart. We've been hearing from the sanitation workers, the people who,
right,
pick up our rubbish.
Right.
And they feel very responsible for mistakes that might be happening because of policy or problems that can't get funded. So we have to have a big mahalo out there to our public workers who endure pay cuts and work double time, but we need to protect them so they're not exploited.
Well, thank you for that. That is nice to hear. You know, in a meeting not too long ago, you know, where we were just sitting around talking story, and, you know, I really, it's, to be a public worker, you're really doing it because you care and you want the community to be better around you. And that's why we're in these jobs, is because, just like you said, we want to make our community as best that we can. And it's just, it can be frustrating, you know, when there's these threats like the Friedrichs case where everything can be taken away in a moment's notice. I mean, it'll change everything regarding public sector unions. And once, if the case, you know, goes the way we hope it doesn't go, I mean, there's no saying that private sector unions would be next. It would just be a welcome a welcome mat to challenge any sort of workers coming together and standing together to make all of our lives better.
So you want this decision to be in favor of the California
Teachers Association.
So if they win, what that's saying is...
What that would be is that it would reaffirm the Abood decision from 1977.
So pretend people don't know what that means.
Yes.
Just make it very simple. That
right.
means it would reaffirm that everybody
means,
contributes to the...
Right. If you're going to be a part of... If you're going to take a job that has union backing, you would contribute because you benefit from the services that the union provides.
Okay, so I'm going to break that down.
Sure.
People might get a job and they'd think, okay, I have to pay, I'm going to make X amount. I'm going to say $75 a month for my union fee, even though I'm not a member of the union. And they, if they could get away with not paying that, most people would not pay it, and they would hope that the union still exists, so somebody else is paying for their challenge. Now, sometimes I joke and say, in a perfect world, every child is vaccinated but your own. And having a union is like vaccination ensuring worker protections.
Right. That's a very good analogy.
And so if Friedrichs wins, it starts to erode the unions, because what could happen then is that anybody who says, I'm going to work a union job without being in the union and piggyback on the protection the rest of the union members give me.
Right.
And so that in itself would tend to cause it to really weaken, because you can't have everybody riding in the wagon. Somebody's got to be pulling the cart, right?
Absolutely.
And so the way it is now, everybody's got to pull the cart.
Right. And it's really about linking arms and standing together. Because we're always under attack. People are always, governments are always trying to take away what people have fought and died for. And you know, it's really important that we, especially now, we have to come together. All unions need to come together and rebuild the middle class.
So can I throw another question at you?
Sure.
And I do want to acknowledge that the unions really were, again, the mo'o, or the spine, that helped to build the middle class. And even for right-to-work states, like I grew up in a right-to-work state, they didn't have the union. But many companies came from union states. And in order to draw their people over, they moved to these lower-rent places like Arizona and still gave all those benefits that the unions built up. So it was still a byproduct of it. So here's my question for you, and I don't know the answer. Unfunded mandates, that's a fancy word for meaning, are you going to get your retirement? Like when we look at where this money goes in for the retirement accounts, having looked at the budget for Kauai, I'm nervous that they're going to really be able to fund these things. So sometimes, like we've seen that in the airlines, they had the unions, they had all this. People worked a lifetime saving in their accounts, their retirement, and then the airlines or whoever goes, oh, you know what? We can't do it. And we'll sell our airline and change the name or whatever happens. What gives you confidence that there is the capacity to fund the agreements that are being made? Just because they say it doesn't mean they have the money.
Right. So there's a lot of issues that you had brought up, and I'm actually in the middle of reading a book by Robert Reich. It's called Saving Capitalism. I highly recommend it. He talks specifically about the airlines and the little bit that I've read so far. Specifically, he looks at American Airlines and how they filed for bankruptcy. And, you know, for the past 30, 40 years or so, the rules of the market have been changed to against the worker. So, like, say, for example, airlines can file bankruptcy so that they no longer have to pay pensions for their workers, and then, boom, give their CEO $20 million bonus because now exactly. we don't got to pay pensions anymore.
Right.
So this book, Robert Reich's book, which I do recommend, it's pretty good so far, really talks about how the game has been changed. And so what we need to do, and this goes back to, you know, union members raising our own monies to help get candidates who will help try and rebuild the middle class and realize that the trickle-down economics does not work. You know, you see all this money being sent overseas to the Cayman Islands or anywhere else in the world just so that they don't have to pay taxes. Everything's going overseas. But being able to rebuild the middle class, it really starts with having rebuilding our unions and getting them strong and getting people active and involved.
The Treasury Secretary or something, right? I mean, he had a really key role.
He was with the Clinton administration.
Yeah, Bill Clinton administration,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And now he's at UC Berkeley. He's in charge of, I think, the public policy department.
In this book, does he bring up these large, there's three, almost four large global trade agreements. One is the Trans-Pacific Partnership with, I want to throw out to the side, people need to be weighing in and speaking to their representatives. It's in the House right now. I sent my letters actually to the Senate and the Rep saying I'm not okay with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership, does Robert Reich address how that would still yet externally upend unions?
I haven't finished the book yet, so I haven't gotten all the way through yet. But I do follow Robert Reich on Facebook, and I have seen him post about it. Now, I haven't had the chance to look deeply into how that would affect unions and vice versa, so I couldn't really comment on that.
I bet it would affect it profoundly.
Yeah, and I'm sure he has, and he's very active on his Facebook page.
I recommend that, you know, it get looked at pretty heavily locally because that's the challenge with these global elements. What we were speaking about a little bit earlier in the show, I played a couple of Tulsi Gabbard's clips. I want to give her a big high five. I'm giving her two of them. You know, she's been really speaking up. But when we look at these global trade deals, it will be worse than the North America Free Trade Agreement, a.k.a. NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very important that people work consciously to be supporting everybody's efforts to keep our core base here strong. But, you know, it's if I have union listeners listening, and this is an important issue to you, pay attention to what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is or the TPP and research it and have your voice be heard. I'm not going
to
tell
representatives about this. One.
Right? Yeah, I'm not telling people what they need to feel. I know what I feel, but don't let this moment pass. Many people go, what's the TPP? They haven't heard of it. And there's another thing called the TPIP, which is the same thing for the Atlantic side. But this is another end run around the common citizen.
And it's an end run around fair taxes, workers' rights, the right to affordable medicine. It basically gives corporations the power to say, if any country tries to make a law to protect its citizens, a corporation has a right to sue the country for affecting its profits.
That's right. And for the amount of what they estimate as the lost profits. And so they can sue for billions of dollars, which is a better investment than even doing the effort. So continue, though. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. We're discussing the Fredericks versus California State Teachers impacts on the union. I have Josh Kapp on here. Jazz with John is coming up very shortly. A few more thoughts, Josh.
Yeah, so, you know, when you're looking at right-to-work states, you know, there's comparing right-to-work states versus union states. What can you expect if right-to-work comes to us? You can definitely expect to earn less. Workers earn around $1,500 less per year in right-to-work states than union states. Wisconsin was even higher than that. That was up to $5,000-$6,000 less. In a right-to-work state, you're more likely to be uninsured by the employer. You're more likely to be unemployed. 8 of the 12 highest unemployment rates have right-to-work laws on the books. And this may sound dramatic, but it is true. You may be killed on the job. The rate of workplace death is 52.9% higher in right-to-work states.
Yes, and when we think about, we're talking about county workers,
yeah.
Think about those people that I drove past road construction, people
yeah.
in the ditches today, or in the trenches in the road,
mm-hmm.
in the rain. You know, the people put a lot of risk out on a regular basis, putting the cones out for us, doing all these things. We have lost at least one person in the last year or two working road
yeah.
construction,
yeah.
and they do so much for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's true.
And if you're tired because you're doing a double shift or you have to go and work a second job, like I notice some of people with as important jobs as principals of schools, vice principals are working baggage claim at night
right.
to be able to make ends meet, and you're tired.
That is an absolute fantastic point, especially here. Like we look back at Wisconsin and dropping six grand in your pay just right off the top, you know, if collective bargaining goes away. It's like we already have people who work in public services working 2-3 jobs just to survive. You know, I've heard this kind of anecdotal story, you know, 20 years ago, people had a second job so they could go to Vegas and have spending money. It's like now you have to have a second or third job just to survive.
And yes.
Pay your mortgage, yeah.
And I, you know, the elected officials aren't in the union, and the people sitting around, say, for example, the county council, typically make more than the council people. And what is up with the Charter Review Commission even this month? I'm going to have them on the show next week, is looking at the districting and things with the county council. But 5 of our council members have another job. Mm-hmm. Several of them have a pretty solid straight job. And even our council chair, he works the night shift at the hotel.
Right.
And so people go to work tired. And you don't do as well tired. And we need to not do that to our people.
Yep.
Yeah. And you're more likely to make a mistake and get hurt if you're working tired, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just imagine if vacation and sick leave gets turned into personal days. You know, so you're combined vacation and sick leave. Then you got people coming in to work sick, getting people sick. It's dangerous.
Yes.
It's dangerous.
And that's a big challenge. And that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
So I want to give you a minute or two to put your final thoughts out. We're getting towards the end of our show, and I appreciate your illuminating this to us. I think I saw a letter to the editor that mentioned this.
Yeah, we got that letter in, I think it was 2 Sundays ago.
Yeah.
But there's not anything somebody can do other than to pay attention, right?
They certainly can. They can get involved.
How can they get involved?
So depending on whatever type of job you work in, if you're a state and county employee, you know, come to HGA meetings, come to union meetings, get involved, get active. If you work for any other union-protected jobs, get involved, get active. Talk to your union reps. Talk to the people who are in the leadership positions. I didn't start getting involved until I was asked. One of my colleagues asked me. She asked me to come get involved. So, and I said yes. So, you know, sometimes that's all it takes, is just asking people to get involved. So if you're involved, get other people involved. Get people active. Get people talking.
Spread the
word. I've had so many conversations with people who don't realize the benefits they have or because of what the union has fought for. They think, oh, we've got, you know, X, Y, and Z benefits. Those are never going to go away. Well, you know, those are always brought up at negotiations that try and get taken down. And so it's get involved. You know, we're only as strong as the people who come out and and share their voice. I mean, everyone's got a voice.
Is there a phone number?
I don't have one off the top of my head.
All right. But, so Hawaii Government Employees Association or whatever union you're involved
whatever
in.
Whatever union you're in. And if you're not involved in a union, think of forming one.
There's, I think local number 5, I kind of really like that one. That's some of the hotel workers because they have something called IKEA, and it's a very activated group that helps with social justice issues well beyond the union. So the unions are bigger than people think. So I want to mahalo both you and Ray Catania and for all the work that's being done, and just putting a little buzz out there yesterday, too. I went to the Citizens Advisory Committee for the general plan update. They were talking about economic development. Next time, in a month from now, it's going to be on infrastructure. That's another one where people need to weigh in. A big piece, and it was brought up about living wage. And I know that Ray particularly has really fought for the $15 an hour. And so it's keeping the voice going. And so thank you both for calling in.
Felicia,
yes.
I want to thank you for your educated questioning of Josh. You asked some really good questions. And I'm also glad that you brought up the TPP.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes. Everybody has to understand that. Everybody has to study it. You know, and those people that don't understand, we should share the information with them. But I want to thank you again for, you know, giving us this opportunity and the questions that you asked right on spot, you know, and very good. And it shows that you're really thinking about what's going on.
Well, thank you. Thank you for giving me a good get grade.
Well, you know, every time I talk to you, I have nothing but praises. So, you know, your show is good. Yeah, thank you. So mahalo for having us on.
Okay, mahalo.
Okay.
And that's wonderful. And so we just keep having all different kinds of ways people to help each other. A few little things that are coming up and have just happened. I want to mahalo out Church of the Pacific and then Aninaho. That happens to be two places that I know right in this area who did a free Thanksgiving dinner, you know, a wonderful time. I heard people had a beautiful experience. I know Aninaho, that's in Kilauea near the mini golf. They're going to do one for Christmas. I will probably be at that one. For those listening, when you hear this particular show sometimes being a little North Shore heavy, it's because I live on this side of the island. I invite people to always be calling in, sharing in the good things that they've got going on. A week from Sunday, Regenerations Botanical Gardens is going to be having a food forest celebration. It's our third year for this food forest that was grown there.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and a little mini seed and plant exchange. That's all something to be shared out. It's a, I call it a generosity party.
Nice. I think I'll be there.
Yeah.
I don't think I have to work that day.
Yeah, it's a Sunday, and it's going to be a little bit different than normal. It's going to be 10 to 1, and we are going to be planting a few trees for our transcended angels that we have lost recently. We have had so many people going, and I'm going to end this show with a song that Dina's co-grandmother had put on her site. Is it's called Hallelujah. And so before I say aloha and we end on Hallelujah, Aurelius, I really appreciate your coming in to this show. We had a caller a little bit earlier, if he's still listening, that he would like to do a show. People, when they want to do it, they come in and they start experiencing it. And why don't you tell us for a minute or so what you would envision with the type of show that you would like to be putting on KKCR.
Good. Well, thanks for having me. And this has been a great show. It's not my first time on KKCR. It's my first time sitting in on a show with you, Felicia. And this is really going in the direction that I want to share with KKCR listeners. How universal this feeling that we really have to work for our basic freedoms. And democracy is and free speech is such a part of that. And just now I learned so much about how unions interact. I think it was great how you kind of reined in that conversation for the people who don't speak union.
Or attorney.
Don't speak, attorney, to help us understand the basics of that. But I do understand as much as this. Unions are coming out all over the world to help galvanize the true public opinion. And, we're up against big, big forces like the TPP, like the corporations, like Citizens United. These are all organizations that want to change democracy into a corporatocracy. And with democracy, it's one person, one vote. And with corporatocracy, it's $1, one vote. So if you have $40 billion, you have 40 billion votes. And I think anyone who listens to that breakdown of it would agree that that's not democracy. So, that freedom combined with the fact that indigenous people have paid the biggest price for this is what I want to wrap into my show to help spread that awareness in Kauai as well as the rest of the world.
And it would be a mix of music and talk.
Yeah, sometimes you need to say it with a song, and sometimes, a song will inspire me to share my philosophy, and so I'll want to talk about that as well and invite callers to call in, yeah.
Perfect. And we had a quick caller who just had a little bit more to say about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and talking about the investor-state relationship, but we are just about out. There's so much depth in there. I could see I had a lot of passion on that call, but we are leaving the show, and we are leaving with the song Hallelujah, and Jazz with John is coming right behind me. So John is my big brother here that makes sure I get my songs going, because I still working on getting the songs.